Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Near FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, I'll be joined by Paul Fitzpatrick, sports editor with Cavan-based paper Danglo Celt. Paul has recently written a book entitled Charlie, the story of Charlie Gallagher, the GAA's lost icon. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Paul. Paul, thanks a million for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me, Patrick.
So, Paul, you, in the title you state the GAA's lost icon, Charlie Gallagher, he was such a revered figure in Cavan during the 60s. Why is it that he hasn't received the recognition he deserves outside of Cavan? And a lot of people outside of Cavan would not be too familiar with him.
That's a good question. That's probably why we went with the subtitle of referencing the lost icon, because he definitely had iconic status nationally in the 1960s. To this point, really, he's really only known in a small enough area. He'd be known probably in Cavan and surrounding counties, and Derry, where he lived for over 20 years. I think because he didn't get an All-Ireland medal, he didn't play in an All-Ireland final, that would have probably hurt his legacy in that sense. So he doesn't show up, we'll say, on All-Ireland Gold, on TG Cahir and things like that, because he didn't play in an All-Ireland, didn't play in a lot of big televised games, even though he played in Wembley and stuff like that, but a lot of that footage of when Charlie was playing doesn't exist. So, you know, I suppose keen scholars of the game would know him, but a lot of people wouldn't know him. So that's why we use the fact that he used the phrase the lost icon.
And you were recounting the book his scoring feats, which were incredible. I think you said in 1964 and 65 he was the top scorer. Can you tell us a little bit of what kind of player was Charlie?
There's a chapter in the book, Patrick, called The Making of a Marksman, which kind of talks about his style of play. So he was extremely fast, that's one thing. He was very, very explosive, quick off the mark, low centre of gravity, and unbelievable balance. So a lot of teammates and opponents of his contemporaries who I interviewed talked about his balance and how he was impossible to hit. So back then you would have had defenders who went out to just stop their man playing, and they'd hit you hard legally or illegally, and nobody could put Charlie down, because he had a way of riding tackles. So when he'd bring a ball into contact, he'd be almost airborne, and if you hit him, he'd almost go up rather than going down. Yeah. That's a common theme that people have talked about. He was known for spectacular points. Like he could score from the corner flag, and it was, you know, he kicked the ball really high when he was going for points. So Charlie was a man for the spectacular. He was also a great goal scorer. He scored 49 goals for Cavan in his career. So he carried himself as well with a real swagger and a charisma. Just this morning I was talking to someone who told me that his father played against Charlie in a junior championship final in 1969 for Bruttlesbridge. And his standout memory is that as he jogged past Charlie, he made eye contact with him and Charlie winked at him. And this was in the heat of battle in a championship final. And I laughed because that was typical of Charlie, as far as I can gather.
Yeah, and the comparison has been made that he was similar to George Best. He was kind of the George Best of Gaelic football. Was it that personality that he had? He seemed to be a very, very outgoing type.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, there were several reasons why you could compare him to George Best. First of all, he was a very handsome-looking man. He was dark and had those movie star looks. He had the charisma, and he attracted people. People wanted to be in his company, and you could say that with George Best as well. And he played with a certain panache and style as well. He was a pin-up. And also, they played in the same era, obviously, so like Best would have won a European Cup in 68, and Charlie would have been in his pomp. He won Captain Cavan's also titles in 67 and 69, so you had that. But also then they had their troubles with alcoholism. Like in both their... I wouldn't say Charlie's career was cut short because of alcoholism, but certainly after he stopped playing, like he did hit the drink pretty hard in later years, whereas George Best probably drink shortened his career and then he drank until his demise, like Charlie. So yeah, there were a lot of comparisons, yeah.
And one thing he had in common with George Best, he played in Wembley, and I must admit, prior to reading your book, I wasn't aware of this tournament that took place in Wembley. And I think he was in the team. He won twice in that tournament. Can you tell us a little bit about that tournament? I think it was in 1966 he won the first one, which was amazing because that was the same year that England World Cup. So do you mind, Paul, just telling us a little bit about that Wembley tournament and Charlie's performance in them two finals?
Yeah, so Charlie would have played in Wembley in 63 for the first time. Cavan played Kerry that year. I think the Wembley tournament started in the early 60s.
Mm.
And you would have qualifiers for it at home, and teams would win through to play. And sometimes they'd have the All-Ireland finals would be automatically through, and then the other teams would play off to get the chance to go. Your trip would be paid for. And there was such high emigration in Cavan, all over Ireland, but Cavan was particularly hard hit with emigration. And so you would have had literally thousands of Cavan people in the UK. And when the Cavan team played in Wembley, they'd come on buses. The busloads of them would come from Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham, Coventry, places like that outside of the capital. And they'd come in and they'd call to the team hotel. And it was really superstar stuff. You know, the players were really put up on a pedestal. And that game used to be televised live on RTE. And there wasn't many games televised in that era. Since 66, there's an iconic photograph of Charlie collecting the cup. The cup was called the O'Gorman Cup. It was 3 foot tall. It was an incredible cup. And there's a great picture of Charlie collecting that from the British ambassador. And he's a big smile on his face. And then the following year, they beat Galway, who were 3 in a row All-Ireland champions. And Charlie scored a winning point, and they won the game by a point. So like it was massive to go to Wembley, absolutely huge for ordinary fellas from Cavan to get a chance to go to Wembley, because there wasn't a whole pile of money floating around at that stage. To go to Wembley to be in those sort of dressing rooms that Pelé and Bobby Moore and all these sporting icons had graced, you know, it was absolutely massive.
Yeah, and domestically it was a fascinating time in Ulster football in the 60s. Cavan were the aristocrats for so long, but the 60s kind of changed, and Down were really, really a powerful force in the 60s. So when Charlie was there in the 60s, it would have been a lot tougher playing for Cavan back then, because they didn't have it all their own way.
Yeah, without a doubt. So it's like the late 50s in particular were a huge time of change in Ulster football. So right up until 1955, Cavan really ruled with an iron fist. They had won up to 52, they had won 5 All-Irelands in the previous 19 years, and they were right up there with Kerry or anyone else in the country at that stage. They totally dominated the Ulster Championship every year. And in 55, they won the Ulster Championship, and Charlie's brother Brian was on the team. Lots of that team would have had All-Ireland medals, and you would have had the likes of Jim McDonald coming into the team. They drew with Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final and lost in a replay. And even at that stage, there was a cry out for Charlie to be brought into the panel. He was still a minor. But there was no reason to believe that Cavan were on the verge of any sort of a downfall. But within the next 5 years, you had three different winners for winning this for the first time. So in 56, Tyrone won the Ulster Championship for the first time, beating Cavan in the final, beating Cavan well. In 58, Derry won it. And by this stage, Cavan... In 58, Cavan didn't even get to the Ulster final, which was absolutely unheard of. In 59, Down won it. Just to make things worse, in 60 and 61, Down actually won All-Ireland. So by the time 62 came around, and actually in 61, Cavan lost in the first round to Armagh, which was unheard of. So by the time 62 came around, all had changed for Cavan, and there was an absolute depth of despair. And the Anglo said that out of evil comes good. It was seen as something that no one could have ever envisaged, that Cavan could go 7 years without winning an Ulster title. So to win it back, they had to beat the team that were going for their third All-Ireland in a row, by far the best team in the country in Down. And they did that. And Charlie had a brilliant game. And for the rest of the 60s, Cavan and Down, there was nothing between them. They played in several Ulster finals. And Cavan added Ulster titles in 64 and then 67 and 69. But the difference was that Down... got another All-Ireland out of it in 68, whereas Cavan just never got over the line. That Cavan, 67 in particular, was one that they left behind, I think, against Cork in the semi-final.
Yeah, and you have a fascinating details in the book about the Education Act of 1947. Now, I've heard it being mentioned before in the context of Northern Ireland and the civil rights, how that generation became more educated. But that also had an influence in the Northern teams. Can you tell us how influential was the Education Act that was brought in by the Labour government in England into changing the emphasis on GAA and sport in schools in the north of Ireland?
Well, GAA always thrived in those Catholic schools. Much of Cavan's football success was built on the back of Tim Pat's, which was the diocesan school. They were dominant in the McCrory Cup, and it was just a hothouse of football. And suddenly you did have these other schools in the northern counties, you had the likes of St. Pat's and Man, things like that. But suddenly these schools are opened up to a whole wave of nationalist children who would never have had the chance to go to second level education before because there was a cost involved in it. And the Labour government brought in, I suppose, the welfare state came in at that point, and part of it was free second level education. So suddenly you had this whole wave of Catholic school children who were going and being exposed to a degree. I don't know how sophisticated the coaching was, but there was a degree of coaching, there was organisation and schools football. And they were playing against the likes of the Cavan players and the Monaghan players and realised that as schoolboys that they could take them on and beat them. And then you had, in 1956, like you said, that we'll take it that Saturday in 1947. Mm. There's a direct correlation because in 1956, Tyrone won the Ulster title with a 19-year-old captain. So you can immediately see that generation coming through. Queen's University then, naturally enough, followed on. Mm. They were the whipping boys of the Sigerson Cup to that point because there's just such a small proportion of nationalist lads in the college to make a football team. But I think it was 1958, around that time anyway, that they won their first Sigerson Cup. Charlie Gallagher actually played in that match as well. He was playing for UCD. Mm. So all of this was breeding into more confidence and a higher standard of football among these northern counties, and the backlash had to arrive, and probably Cavan weren't really prepared for it, and they managed to keep it at bay throughout the 60s and more than held their own with Down. But in the 70s then Derry got very strong, and Donegal then got very strong. I know they're in the Republic, but they were coming on strong as well, and Cavan just sort of got left behind.
And you mentioned 69 was a lot of Cavan fans. I'm too young to remember it, but a lot of people say it was the semi-final that went away. It is sad. That was Charlie's last game for Cavan. It is sad that is the way that his Cavan career ended, isn't it?
It is sad. A lot of people have said to me that the ending of the book they find sad. Charlie's later year, really, from there's quotes that he gives to the Evening Herald after that where he kind of says that, you know, watching football, you're not wanted anymore. And it sounds like the words of a very disappointed or heartbroken type figure. He didn't get his All-Ireland, and that was probably what was always driving him. And in 69, they had a great opportunity to play it awfully. And by then, Cavan had brought in, we'd say, the likes of Steve Duggan and Micheál Green and Gene Cusick, top-class forwards to complement Charlie, because Charlie was getting on at that stage. In 69, he was going on 32, and a lot of miles on the clock. So you had a good forward line there that could score. You had John Joe O'Reilly there and fellas like that. So Cavan would have fancied their chances. They beat Down again in the Ulster final, hammered them, and Down were All-Ireland champions. And Cavan were fancied by an awful lot of people to win the All-Ireland that year. They played awfully the first day, and someone, to this day, we don't know who it was, but it's discussed at length in the book, someone made the call to take Charlie off the field and substitute him with about 15 minutes to go in the match, and the game was really tight. It was a wet day, scores were hard to come by, and Cavan got a free in front of the post and it was missed, and without a doubt Charlie Gallagher had scored hundreds of frees for Cavan. Without a doubt he wouldn't have missed it. And they actually brought Charlie back on, but it was too late. They drew the game, but in the replay they were confident they'd win it, but they let in three goals in the first half, and the game got away from them. And amazingly, Charlie never played again for Cavan. Tom Lynch never played again. Gabriel Kelly, I think, didn't play again. Mick Higgins stood down as manager. T.P. Riley stood down as chairman, you had huge amounts of change after that. Without anyone realising it, it was the end of an era. And we've only been back in an All-Ireland semi-final once, so we've never come that close to getting to an All-Ireland final, which is amazing to think.
Yeah, it's good. And professionally, Charlie was a dentist. He was a dentist in Derry. That must have been a very tough time, because Derry at that time would have been a war zone. So it was a very, very tough time for him there when he was living in Derry.
It was, without a doubt. Like he worked for Barney Cully, the great cabin fullback of the 40s. And then in time, Charlie took over the practice, and he would have been doing very well. Charlie wasn't a man who was motivated by money, and he was known that he was known for his generosity. He wouldn't charge people. He didn't care. He had no value on money. But he would have been doing very well, and he was raising a family. But he had an awful lot of pressures. He wasn't a great businessman. He had the pressure of marriage and parenthood, and then he was removed from the source of his celebrity, and that Derry wasn't a big soccer, or it was a big soccer town. It wasn't a big Gaelic place. So Charlie probably wasn't as big a name there. And Charlie was a man who liked the celebrity and a bit of fame. He thrived on it. So you know, all of those things. And then Derry, as you say, was a war zone.
Yeah.
And the troubles were kicking off. Like, the early 70s were really, really dark in Derry. And there was a big drinking culture. You didn't go walking the streets at night. It was too dangerous. So people drank in houses and things like that. Charlie would have got caught up in that drinking culture as well. He would have been popular. People would like to be in his company. Drink was flowing around. And all of that contributed, I suppose, to his demise. And amazing to think that within 20 years of Catherine and Cavan, that was the final in 69, Charlie had passed away.
And before I let you go, Paul, just want to ask you, bring it up to the present day. Cavan had a reasonably good year this year, got to the Ulster final. Where do you think Cavan are at the moment? Do you think we will ever see a day where Cavan are returning, winning Ulster titles?
It's a good question. I think this year a reasonably good year. Really, you know, it was going great up until the Ulster final. But I know we only lost the Ulster final by 4 points, but to be fair, I think Donegal had eased off long before the end. And then a very, very bad defeat against Tyrone. Like, it was a defeat that set us back a good bit. So it's really it was hard to evaluate it. We only won one game in the league against Roscommon. I do think that without a doubt, Cavan can win Ulster titles again. By the law of averages, you're going to get good draws and you're going to get to finals. And just at times we haven't had any luck. You're going to get the bounce of a ball. But what Cavan need most, I think, is to hold on to all the players. They have to stop this chopping and changing of players coming and going. Hold on to all the players and try and build year on year. And just get a bunch of the lads that are going to put their life on hold for a couple of years and give it everything they have. And it's amazing how quick things can change in football. I would be hopeful that the future is bright for Cavan, but at this moment in time, you know, I probably think we're as far away as we have been.
Yeah. Listen, Paul, thanks a million for joining us. Your book, Charlie, The Story of Charlie Gallagher, the GAA's Lost Icon, is available in all good bookstores now. It's highly recommended for not just Cavan football supporters, any GAA fans. It's an excellent read. So thanks again for joining us this evening.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
That's great. That's Paul Fitzgerald, or Paul Fitzpatrick even, joining us to tell us about his new book, The Story of Charlie Gallagher, the GAA's Lost Icon. I'm just going to take a piece of music now, and we'll be back after that.